You're listening to the show that talks about stuff the others can't, don't, or won't. The Drew Marshall Show on Joy 1250.
Little girl, what's your game? Hard luck and trouble, bound to be your claim to fame.
Well, there's not many people I would play that intro song for. This gal's got a great sense of humor and a lot of fun to chat with. I'm looking quite forward to this next interview with Dr. Shelley Rabinovich, who holds a PhD from the University of Ottawa in religious studies and is a cultural anthropologist whose work focuses on ritual studies, the role of women in religion, and alternative spiritualities. Her MA at Carleton University was Canada's first ethnographic study of Canadian witches. Wow. Wiccans. Wow. And pagans. Oh my. Joining us is the one and only Dr. Shelley Rabinovich. How you doing, Shelley?
Very well. How are you, Drew?
Fantastic. We're tired, though. It's been quite a show. You know, we've talked to a former Satanist. We've talked to Sylvia Brown, the psychic. And, you know, it's our Halloween special, and this is all interesting stuff for us. So thanks for waiting for us.
No problem. Pleased to be here.
I'd like to introduce you to my co-host today, Cheryl Weber, from the TV show Full Circle. Cheryl, this is Dr. Shelley Rabinovich.
So good to meet you.
And you.
She has so many questions for you. Do you want to get right into the women's stuff right away?
No.
Let's do it.
Okay, we're getting into it.
Let's do it. Because, you know, in your bio there, it said you had this thing of the role of women in religion. And obviously, in that field, you must have had a discussion or studied the reality that in the evangelical scene, especially in the conservatives, you know, the Baptists, they don't want the women up there in the pulpit.
That is true. There's a discomfort with women in leadership roles or as evangelists that really goes back hundreds and hundreds of years.
I know Drew doesn't think that I should actually be allowed to be in leadership.
Oh,
but,
stop it.
You know, no one listens to Drew anyway.
Wow. This is where we're going? Okay, fine. Okay, so do you see, give us a little history. For the evangelicals that are sitting in their comfortable misogynistic churches, and they're going, yeah, no, God does not want a woman in leadership. I mean, in your studies, where has all that come from? These guys would say it comes from the Word of God that, you know, it says an elder, which would be your leader, your pastor, is to be the husband of one wife. And so that they go, well, that means it's got to be a male.
Well, let's start with the fact that God, in his infinite knowledge, had a 50-50 choice as to who to send to bring the gospel, mm-hmm. male or female. I don't think God was thinking about transgenders in that day and time.
No, maybe not, no.
Wouldn't have gone down so well. And who was in power 2,000 years ago?
Men.
Men ran the show.
Mm-hmm.
So let's be serious. If Jesus had been Gisette or Gisette, Giselle, would anyone have listened to her?
No.
No. So let's start with that.
Okay.
But if you look at the artwork in the earliest catacombs where we know the earliest Christians were buried, we see pictures of women running home churches in the center of the paintings where they are buried. So clearly, you know, 1900 years ago, women were really important. But we have lived for 2,000 years in a culture where women are allowed to, if you will, minister in the home sphere. You know, raise the children, give them the right values and things. But in the public sphere, not so much.
Right.
And it's just been a logical extrapolation ever since then.
I have a good friend, I was telling Drew before the show, who was into the Wiccan religion for a number of years. And one of the reasons that it attracted her is because she believed that Christianity was a patriarchal religion that oppressed women. And she was really angry about that. Do you find that to be true?
Yes. A lot of people that I have met who identify themselves as Wiccans or witches or pagans will make offhanded comments such as, you know, recovering Christian. So clearly there's something they're pushing back against very hard.
And Wiccan is very pro-women.
Very much so. I think of the various flavors, if you will, traditions of paganism that are out there today in the contemporary scene. The face of the divine is either female or equally female and male.
You know, and that's a thing that I think a lot of, especially in the evangelical scene, if you are reading the same Bible that I'm reading, then there are many times in Scripture where God is portrayed with feminine attributes. And yet we do hunker down, I think, you know, Father God stuff is the thing that keeps us thinking that Father God is male. All male. 24/7.
Yeah, I mean, it's easy to get there. When the Messiah has a male face. Judaism doesn't have that. Judaism, God is described as having an overt or a face to the public side, and that's male, and a covert or face to the people, face within the family, and that's female. That's wisdom. That's Shekinah.
Well, I've always thought that if women are made in the image of God, which the Bible says that we are, then God has to have our characteristics, or logically it just doesn't follow.
God created he, them.
Let's talk about your study you did this Canada's first ethnographic study of Canadian witches, Wiccans, and pagans from coast to coast. Tell us about the witches, Wiccans, and pagans from coast to coast.
Well, let me tell you, it was a great way to spend a summer. I don't mean to be flip.
No, you partied with all of them, didn't you? I know
you
did.
A lot of them. I think it was in Saskatoon talking to some self-identified witches, and the phone rang, and it was a witch from the Yukon. I didn't have, you know, funding to go up into the territories or out to Newfoundland. But, you know, I could say, yes, we know there's at least one witch up in the Yukon. I basically traveled from Ontario west, and I made it out to Victoria and some of the Channel Islands. So I really did go.
Very appropriately named place for witches than the Channeling Islands.
Oh, indeed, yes. Yeah, they were channeling something, probably the salt in the spring, but there you go.
So, hold on. Are you, this is getting all higher education-y here. Are you a witch?
You know, my students, inevitably somebody asks me that, and I smile sweetly in the same way that a fairly prominent American pagan does, and I say, well, I guess I'll wear that label if you really feel you need to put that on me, but I'm a little more comfortable with pagan.
Right. So who is Anahita Gula?
Anahita Gula would be a public name I use when I'm writing stuff, not as an academic.
Okay. Does that mean when you're writing stuff about witchcraft or about what your beliefs are?
When I'm writing as an insider.
As an insider?
Yes.
Within the circle of Cubbins?
Well, when I'm writing as a witch,
right.
Then I use a public pseudonym. Anahita was an ancient goddess, and Gula, my favorite, Gula was a Babylonian goddess of flies.
Oh, wow. And that's your favorite?
Well, yes, because, you see, she was attached to plagues, and most people go, oh, my goodness, any figure that would be a plague goddess would be terrible. But if you think of it, if plague was running rampant through your village and you wanted to protect yourself and your family, wouldn't you pray to the goddess of flies, and because, you know, flies bring plague, and say, you know, protect us. Please tell your minions not to come to our house. So, yes, I mean, you know, it just amuses me immensely that there was a goddess of flies.
That's funny.
Okay, so when we're talking about witches, I mean, people have these preconceived ideas, you know, not just the classic image of the witch, but also this idea of putting curses on people or evil. Are there some witches like that, or do they use their powers for good? How does that shake down?
You know what? I'm going to predict your answer, Shelley. I'm going to predict it here. I'm thinking you're going to say something like, well, there are stupid, moronic, evil Christians. And there are good Christians. There are people within the Christian church who you want to slap because they're boneheads, and then there are good ones who are selfless and all about good and light and that kind of thing. And it's the same thing in the witch scene.
It's do we give you bonus?
Thank you.
Channeling.
Thank you very much.
Just grow his ego just a little bit more.
Yeah. You confuse ego with evil. Very,
oh no, it's not spelled quite
Freudian slip there.
All right, so what do you think?
The truth is quite simple. In any religion, yes, there are boneheads you're going to want to slap or shake and go, can you not get it? What is wrong with your brain?
Right.
And interestingly enough, amongst the pagans I interviewed and the witches and pagans that I know, very few of them fall into that, you know, evil doing. As a matter of fact, they would all look at you and say, what are you, nuts?
Hmm.
Because in these days, you know, the number drops a little. So let's say 65 to 70% of the witches that I've met are converts. They weren't born into this religion. It used to be higher, but pagans are having kids, and now we're having, you know, 16, 17, 18, 20-year-old kids who were born as pagans and as witches. But because it's a religion of conversion, you know, people say, this is who I am, what I was born into doesn't work for me, they really embrace using magic, if you believe in it, sort of like a force in nature, for healing and for good. And, you know, they work in animal rescues and stuff like that. Very few of them would even self-identify as doing malicious stuff.
Shelley, forgive me for asking this, but I ask it because I genuinely want to know your response to help me understand the truth behind the silliness that I'm about to ask.
Mm-hmm.
In my limited experience, it has been my anecdotal experience that the vast majority of those who claim to be witches or pagans or Satanists are cultural outcasts in the culture in which they live. In other words, this is going to sound harsh, so please correct me, okay?
Mm-hmm.
I totally don't mind. But a lot of those folks got beat up in school for being geeks.
Yeah, actually, a lot of them did. My master's research showed that, extrapolating off the Canadian census that was done closest to when I did my work, the education level of people who identify themselves as witches and pagans is right off the meter compared to the general, you know, religious or a-religious communities. I had over 54%. Of people who call themselves witches and pagans with PhDs.
Wow.
Yeah.
So smart.
Straight kids get beat up. Fat kids get beat up.
Yeah.
You bet.
But smart, not social.
Sometimes very social.
Right.
Although I think you might look at the community and say there are a lot of people I notice who look like they should be at, you know, any gaming conventions and
right.
science fiction conventions.
Right, yeah. Yeah, and I really, Tim.
We got the Big Bang Theory.
Tim's laughing in the background. Yeah, the Big Bang Theory. Yeah. Okay, so Shelley, what were you born into? I mean, were you not born into Judaism?
Yes. I was born into what I refer to with great fondness as a conservadox
mm-hmm.
Jewish family, conservative leaning towards orthodoxy.
Wow. Good luck with that one.
Mm-hmm.
And when did you start? I mean, was this sort of a journey of rebellion for you to get away from that?
No. As a matter of fact, when I was an undergrad, I went the direction of I'll put in quotations, evangelical Judaism, but I was leaning towards the Chabad, the Hasidic mm-hmm. Judaism for a while. So it was a process of seeking. And a death experience when I was 16 had a big impact. By the time I was, you know, 16, 17, 18, I recognized that the framework of my ancestors wasn't working for me, and then the question was why, you know.
Okay, well, obviously I want to talk about the death that had the impact when you were 16. What mm-hmm. was it, what happened then? What was?
I was put on medication that, you know, I wasn't getting better. It was a really, you know, fairly unexciting illness, and I was just put on antibiotics, and I was getting worse and worse. So we went to a walk-in clinic, my family and I, because, you know, I'm a kid, I'm living at home. I'm not what you'd call a rebellious kind of child.
Right.
And the doctor went, okay, now you've got a secondary infection. I'm going to switch you off medicine A, put you on medicine B, stay on it for a week, and when the secondary infection, you know, clears up, go back on the main medication, finish the amount, go back to your GP, because it was a, you know, walk-in weekend clinic. And, okay, went through this other prescription, felt better, everything was great, things are clearing up. Mom looks at me and says, oh, don't forget, you have to finish that first prescription, and then we'll bring you back, you know, make sure everything's clear. Great. Took my first, you know, dose of this original medication, and within 20 minutes of taking it, I had trouble breathing. I swole up like a giant burgundy balloon, Scott Rushdie are, you know, I mean, I'm cutting down a story that, sure. that spins for about 25 minutes.
Thank you for cutting that down.
Oh, you know, I know you don't have a whole hour to talk about my death. And after the first 24 hours, they told my parents I'd had a restless night. And when my friends found out I was in and phoned, they were told I'd been on the critical list. And I had my blood pressure dropped to 60 over 40. And by the time I came back, I touched, if you want to call God, that's exactly, you know, I'm quite comfortable with that. I was in the presence of the divine. And I'm entirely, ever since that point, I've not been afraid of dying. I've not been afraid of what is waiting on the other side. And what I realized was that presence with a capital P certainly struck me as being more feminine and life-assuring and supporting than the vengeful God of the Old Testament that I had grown up with.
You know, there's a theme here with you and Sylvia Brown, who we spoke to earlier, as there is a theme in a lot of discussions I have with the regular Joes at the pub or, you know, just about spiritual God stuff, is mm-hmm. nobody likes the spanking that God might give. Nobody likes the disciplinary side of God. Nobody likes the, you know, and I parallel this to me as a parent. You know, mm-hmm. a good parent sets up boundaries for the kids, and when the kids go past those boundaries, there are consequences. And I don't mean, you know, beating the snot out of them. I just mean there are punishment consequences. That's good parenting, providing yeah. punishment consequences. That's good parenting. So if that's good parenting, then how come no one really wants that to be a part of God?
Well, I'll tell you what, if you asked your, you know, 4 or 6-year-old or your 10-year-old.
Yeah, if they like it or whatever. Yeah.
Do they like it? No. You'd get the same answer.
Yeah.
You know, children are rebellious. Children actually, and I mean, psychological studies show that we do crave a framework. Hmm. You know, we do need boundaries. You know, why did I walk beyond it? Because I think by the time that I was making those kinds of decisions, I recognized that a great deal of the trappings of the religion of my ancestors just didn't make sense. Hmm. I mean, the story of Job doesn't make a lot of sense.
No, I'm not a big fan of that one either.
Talk about the ultimate example of, I don't care how much you like it, this is what you're going to do, and I'm going to keep spanking you until you finally get it.
I know.
You know?
Usually when the Job stuff comes around, I just put my fingers in my ears and go, la, la, la,
la,
la,
la. Yeah. I mean, I understand why that story's there.
Yeah, for
You know, God is the big daddy and understands what's best for us. Hmm. And, you know, sometimes we say, no, I don't think you do. I think I know better. And so it's the story of testing and testing and testing, you know, as with, you know, Jacob, you know, testing, testing, testing.
Right, right.
And then ultimately it's like, yes, you did what you're supposed to.
On the line with Dr. Shelley Rabinovich, who we've called our friendly neighborhood pagan witch today. And but, of course, she is so much more than that. And might I just say, I love the width, the breadth of your studying. I mean, you've really taken a whole big, broad gander at this world of faith, of religion, of even, you know, women fitting in. I mean, just, I love how much you've studied, the variety of study. I mean, I just find it very refreshing. The Jesus people are known to be narrow-minded and only buy Christian books at Christian bookstores and read what Christians say about other people. You know, we're known, you know, the evangelicals for that. But what I'm trying to say is I have come across a number of pagans over the last number of years, and it's pagan this, pagan that, pagan this, pagan that, and it's really the only discussion that they want to have, you know, Wiccan, et cetera. But you've just got a great knowledge about a lot of stuff.
Well, if you think about it, anybody who converts usually wants to convince everybody else how perfect whatever it is they found
is.
And so I imagine, you know, many pagans, it's like, oh, no, you Christians just don't really understand. Here, let me sell you my religion,
right,
which is much better and
right,
shinier.
Ding.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I don't go there. I think, if I remember, and I'm not a New Testament specialist, in my father's mansion there are many rooms. And I have always taken that to mean that if we accept God as all-knowing and as all-powerful, God knows that we who are his creations are very, very flawed. And so maybe he did need to make a whole bunch of different rooms in order to find him.
Hmm.
Then the mansion is God and God's truth and God's knowledge and wisdom. And for some people, that door is Hinduism. And for some people, that door is evangelical Protestant. And for others, it's liberal Catholicism. But they all come to the same source.
Could you ever see yourself worshiping peanut butter and watercress sandwiches?
Gosh, I hope.
I mean, truly, that's one of your favorites. That's one of your favorites.
It's one of the strangest things I was ever given to eat.
That is very strange.
You want me to explain that anecdote?
Please do.
I was very fortunate. If Gerald Gardner was sort of the founding father of modern witchcraft and modern pagans, he was a Brit. And he died in the 1960s. Then Doreen Valiente is sort of the founding mother. And she wrote most of the framework of rituals that are used by most pagans today, even though the bulk of them don't realize not only that it was written by one person, but it really only goes back to the 50s and 60s of this past, century. And I was very fortunate. I got to visit her in England 3 or 4 times before she passed away in 1999. And I did not realize when I picked up a friend of mine who was a graduate of York, in Toronto, and is now married to a Brit, and we went to visit her on the South Coast, and I did not realize the lady was a vegetarian. We had, gone there, and she said, why don't you come up and we can have lunch together and drink tea?
Is that how she talked?
Yes, she did. She had a lovely accent. She's a very, very erudite lady.
Lovely.
And, so we show up, and she says that she's got cheddar from the town of Cheddar and watercress. And I blanched because I'm lactose intolerant. And I went, how lovely. And I'm trying to think, okay, maybe I'll say I'm not that hungry, and we'll go out and grab something.
So you came out with, do you have any peanut butter?
No, I didn't. She looked at me. Now, she had lived through World War II, right, in England, in the bombings, in the shelters. And she told me she had not eaten peanut butter since the end of the war.
Hmm.
I guess it was
sick
about the only protein you could get
right.
at Ford. She says, but I was shopping just recently, and I saw this jar of peanut butter, and it just looked so delightful. Would you rather have peanut butter? And I went, well, that would be lovely.
Oh,
and, I'm looking at my friend Judith, and I said, if you have any jam or jelly, that would be delightful. She's so lovely. She shuttles off, and she had like a galley kitchen. You could not get a mouse into that thing with her. And she trots back out, puts a great big, ginormous, dribbling brown Betty of tea up. And, Judith and I are drinking tea, and she's rustle, rustle, rustle in the kitchen, comes out, and she says, I hadn't thought of it, Shelley, but I think this is quite delightful, and gives us all peanut butter and watercress sandwiches.
That's wrong. That's a pub game we do. We try to come up with the worst combination of food, possible. And
Well, what was it? Wasn't it Elvis who liked, I think, onion and banana?
That's wrong. Can we get back to talking about witches, please? You're grossing me out here.
Can we get back on topic?
Oh, of course. Although I'll tell you, actually, it wasn't too bad. Peanut butter, tomato, and watercress sandwiches are kind of like satay vegetables,
Thanks.
I wasn't sure.
So listen, I've got a little research piece here that says you first joined a coven in the early 70s?
That's right, yes.
How, where, when, why?
My family was living in the States for a few years, and that's where the accent comes from, because I'm actually Canadian-born.
Okay.
But it's just an accent that worms into your brain and doesn't go away. And I was in high school in Arizona. And strangely enough, in the creative writing class I was in, we had both a Satanist and a witch. And I went, I don't know what either of these people are up to, but they bear careful watching and scrutiny. I wasn't sure if either of them or both of them were going to try and turn me into frogs.
You mean French? Oh, no, sorry, wrong.
No, wrong kind. I was from Montreal, and that was what they all assumed anyway. The neo-Satanist, the Mr. I Worship Satan dude, was really all about three very important people. Not the Father, Son, and the Holy Ghost, but me, myself, and I.
Yeah.
And it just didn't work for me. The pagan, the Wiccan, about self-empowerment and goddess and positive things, and I thought, now, this is making more sense. So I dabbled in it for about a year and a half, and then the family moved back to Canada, and I had no contacts up in Toronto at the time, which is where we'd moved.
Well, what is the difference between a teenage dabbler and a real witch?
Well, you'd have to ask the dabbler and the witch.
Right. No, but I can imagine real witches would be frustrated with the posers.
They're frustrated with people that think they can buy one book out of, you know, your bookstore du jour,
yeah,
and they know everything.
Right.
And, you know, just because you don't have a gospel doesn't mean there aren't rules. Doesn't mean that there aren't right and wrong ways to live your life. And you don't get that out of a lot of these Insta-witch books. It just isn't there.
What I want to know is, you come from a Jewish family that's almost Orthodox. You mm-hmm. become a Wiccan pagan or a pagan witch. How in the world did your family receive your conversion?
Let me tell you. My mom was a delightful, very thoughtful, very devout woman who had cancer. And I decided that I wasn't going to give her, as we would say in Yiddish, more tzuras, more ill and things to worry about in her life. And so she knew I researched witches. She knew many of my friends were witches. I didn't actually come out to her before she died. I'm quite convinced she knows now, but, you know, I didn't tell her. My dad died so many decades earlier that, you know, it wasn't an issue. I told my sister, I have one sister, and I told her 20, 25 years ago, and she looked at me a little oddly, and she's quite comfortable with Judaism, thanks, and she knows that I'm into kind of odd stuff. But any discussion of religion and her eyes glaze over, whether it's hers or anybody
else's. Right, right, right. We were talking earlier about, again, just our experiences and misnomers and myths, what mm-hmm. we think we know about witches and pagans and Wiccans, oh my. Are there, forgive me, I'm already saying forgive me, are there a lot of lesbian witches? Are there a lot of lesbians in your scene?
Wow.
Here's a better way to ask it. Do you think there's more lesbians in the Wiccan pagan witch scene or in female hockey?
I've never done a research into female hockey players, so I couldn't actually tell you. Are there more lesbians? Not formally. Are there more bisexuals? Possibly.
Right.
Are there more people who are open about alternative sexuality? Definitely.
Right.
Because one of the key tenets in modern paganism is a folkloric statement that comes out of, I think, Italian gypsy lore, where the goddess says all acts of love are in my honor. So whether it's men and men and women or women or
right.
men and women, you know, as long as they are able to be consenting, children are not there and neither are pets.
No. Well, and see, now I keep thinking about Satanists and witches, and the reality is the Satanists and witches would not get along well, because as you talked about earlier, the two people you were hanging out in high school with, you know, Satanists are really all about hedonism and narcissism, and witches, I think, are a little bit about self-empowering, but also othering.
Helping that which is not able to help itself, whether that's
right.
the environment or your pet, you know, or philosophically or third world. There's a problem here because, and I say this to my students, because I teach magic, witchcraft, and the occult, which is a first-year course at the University of Ottawa, and I have 1,000 students a year in this course. It's marketing. If I called it anthropology of superstition, I'd have 60 students. But you put the W word in,
yeah.
you know, and they're banging the door down
yeah,
for
yeah,
readers
yeah.
to get
yeah.
in. But the problem is the word witch has been stuck on so many unrelated concepts. And Satanists use, some of them do use the word witch. I'm a satanic witch, and they'll use that term. But the issue is, and I actually do this on a board to my students, the worldviews are almost as different as, say, Christian and pagan witch.
Right, right.
Very different.
Okay, let's finish this time with you by asking the stereotypical, sensationalistic, journalistic, moronic questions.
Okay.
Hey, don't use journalism and moron in the same sentence.
Well,
yeah, I was a journalist. Come on now.
All right.
It's not very empowering of you.
No, that's right.
Is. I'm so misogynistic. I get at least once a month that I get one. What was I going to say? Oh, okay. When was the last time you cast a spell?
Oh, a couple of months ago.
Okay. Why?
Because somebody's daughter was very, very sick, and to me, casting a spell, and I'll put that in quotations,
yes,
is akin to praying. I light a candle, which if you're a Roman Catholic and you go to a Virgin Mary shrine anywhere in town, you're going to go into church and you're going to light a candle.
Yep.
And I say a few words focusing on what my concern is. And a Christian would say some words focused on what their concern is. I'm just speaking to somebody who has a different face. Doesn't mean it isn't the same source. And you light the candle, and then you go away, and you think about it, and you check up on, you know, how is your daughter doing? And that's what I call casting a spell, and I did it 2 or 3 months ago because a friend's daughter has cancer.
Have you ever cast a spell in order to mess someone up, or trip them up, or make them trip over their words, or become less of a jerk, or I don't know, whatever?
Oh, I've talked about wanting to do that.
Right.
I think you know, every good Christian I know occasionally says, boy, I wish God would hit so-and-so with a thunderbolt.
Yeah. Yeah, well, that's actually David did a lot of that in the Psalms. He basically said, dear God, sick him.
Yeah, exactly. Do I do that? No. Most witches I know subscribe to something we call the law of return or the law of three, which is any energy I send out will be reflected back on me three times. So if I decide that you should have a toothache for a month, I'm going to need false teeth.
Ooh, wow.
Okay, I'm going to try to get a word in edgewise here because I know Drew just absolutely loves talking to you. He doesn't believe in women in leadership, so I haven't been able to talk.
Oh, stop that!
Yes. You did an ethnographic study of witches across Canada. What is distinct about Canadian witches?
There are a few things, although
insulated hats.
Yeah, right. Yeah, fuzzy hats. Fuzzy hats made with fake fur. Actually, at the time I did the work, there were different, if you will, sects of paganism that weren't really obvious in Canada that have come in since then. But we're closer tied to British pagans than we are American pagans.
Hmm. Well, does that not mean that it's more pagan-y? Because, like, the pagan stuff started over there and didn't start in the States?
Well, you know, a lot of pagans I talk to will refer to their claiming, you know, Celtic pre-Christian religion or Nordic, you know, Odin and Thor and all that.
Mm-hmm.
Thor in the TV show. No, not that one.
No.
As part of their, I think in English we say patrimony, the patrimoine. It's part of my cultural heritage. My ancestors come from England, Ireland, Wales, Cornwall, Scotland. And so, you know, I turn back to the deities that predate the Christian incursion, you know, on my lands. And you don't see as much of that in the States as you do in Canada.
Okay, a final thought
here
on the Drew Marshall Show. If I would gather a group of really influential evangelical Jesus people and gave you the platform, what would be the one thing you'd want them to know about you, about your people, about what you believe?
We are, as a rule, we are devout people, good people. We care about ourselves and the rest of the world. We don't hate Christians. We don't try and cause evil things to Christians. For many of us, Christianity, quite frankly, just isn't on the table. It is as much a distinct and different religion as Buddhism or Islam or Zoroastrians.
Mm-hmm.
We are simply a different door to whatever it is that is ultimate out there.
Shelley, thank you. And I would love to have you on the show again sometime. If you are ever in Toronto, it would be great to have you in studio, take some calls. I don't know, I'm not sure if you ever, you know, would want to do that. But I'm a nice guy. I'm a good person.
I'm a nice guy, and if you have a, you know, a 3-second delay switch so that, you know, if somebody calls in and says something that is just so outrageous that you know, I sit there with my mouth open, you'll want to kill the 3 seconds of my mouth hanging open.
Yeah, we'll be able to handle it. That's great. Well, Dr. Shelley Rabinovich has been our guest, and again, Shelley, thank you. I really appreciate your time.
Mm-hmm. It's been a pleasure, and I hope that your listeners enjoy either Halloween or Jesus-ween, depending on what they're celebrating.
Well said. Well said. Take care, Shelley.
You take care, too. It's
bye-bye.
Been a pleasure.
Bye.
Bye.
Short break on the show. We'll come back. We're going to play you some incredibly irritating songs that just, just cannot escape your cranium. Stay with us.
Like what you've heard? Listen again online at drewmarshall.ca.
Hey, folks, I want to tell you about the Drew Marshall Show 1250 special. You ready for this? For $12.50, that's right, only $12.50, we'll mention your organization's name, website, and a brief description. Did you catch that? During each show, we'll read out your organization's name, website, and a brief description for only $12.50. Now, obviously, there's no point in doing that only once during a four-hour show, so we'll read your advertisement four times per show for an entire month, and each time we do it, it'll only cost you $12.50. It's kind of like putting an advertisement up on every church bulletin in the GTA, except you don't have to get permission from that grumpy old lady at the front desk. Now look, because there are limited spots available for our 1250 special, why don't you call us right now, toll-free, on 877-JOY-1250. Now sure, we're right in the middle of things here in the show, but if you call us right now, toll-free, on 877-JOY-1250, we'll take your name and number and call you back on Monday to sign up for the Drew Marshall Show 1250 special. This is nuts. Are you sure we want to do this? How am I supposed to make any money?